Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie! My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined once again today...
Nice.
...by the great...
2 weeks in a row.
...Mark on...
Lilu Dallas, Multipass.
Multipass?
Multipass.
Bada boom?
Yeah, we all know that it's a Multipass, thank you.
Bada boom.
Big
bada boom.
Big bada, and then it gets... Okay, we'll talk about it.
We're talking about the fifth element today, because why not? Remember, you can find all of our past shows at fthismovie.net. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And find us at DVD Verdict at dvdverdict.com and click on the podcast tab. Did I say that right? Podcast tab?
It says podcast.
Yeah, but that's it sounded weird when it came out. Sometimes weird sound word.
Are they just sliding out of your face?
You hear what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I'm totally stoned, everyone. I'm just kidding. I'm not. Yeah, so thank you to everybody at DVD Verdict for hosting our show once a week. Don't forget, coming up, what, next weekend? Next
really
week?
Soon.
Yeah, I don't know.
Really
February 2nd.
2 weeks from now?
2013.
Yeah.
Will be this year's F This Movie Fest, where we watch 5 movies together and tweet about them all day long.
All day long.
So make sure you're following us on Twitter at twitter.com/FThisMovie, and you just follow the hashtag F This Movie Fest. We're watching 5 movies. The Last Boy Scout, The Rocketeer, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, New Jack City, and Terminator 2 Judgment Day, celebrating the year that was 1991.
I still hear that music, and it makes me pee in my pants just a little bit. Just a little.
But then they use it in things like Terminator Salvation,
right.
And it's not the same.
And then you're like, why are they playing this movie? Why are they playing this music in a Transformers movie?
Right.
Which was the tangent. Which was the same summer that wasn't that G.I. Joe and then Terminator Salvation came out and a Transformers movie came out,
and
then all three of them looked exactly. It just looked like the same.
Yeah, I think that's right. That was 2009, right? Because Star Trek came out also,
yeah.
And that movie was better.
Just vehicles moving without human beings in them, and I was like, that's all the same movie, right? Like,
but I remember Star Trek came out because Doug, F This Movie's own Doug, was on a vacation with his wife.
Father Doug.
And right. Texted me and said, should I go see Star Trek again or Terminator Salvation? And I had just seen Terminator Salvation, and I didn't really like it, and I didn't think it was good.
Right.
Not realizing that sometimes sarcasm doesn't come across in text form, I said, ooh, go see Terminator Salvation. It's really good.
Oh, you're a bastard.
And see, I didn't know that he was like, at the ticket window asking me. So he was like, he wrote back like, wait, are you being serious? Because I'm right in line. Like, is it actually really good? And I had to frantically text him back. I was
no!
Just kidding. Go see Star Trek again.
Why did you text your sarcastic friend?
Yeah,
you wanted
right.
A real answer.
And to this day, I don't think he's seen Terminator Salvation.
That's okay.
But he's also never texted me again.
Oh.
We're not friends anymore,
that's
I guess
okay.
Is what I'm saying. This story had a sad ending.
He just needs a sarcastic texting plan.
Yeah.
Which, that should be invented, by the way.
Are there rollover minutes?
I don't know, sure. There should
for
be.
For that?
There'd be eye rollover
minutes. Nice! Look at you!
I know.
You have, like, a whole bit going right now. I like it.
It sucks.
I'm gonna put a brick wall behind you.
Whoa.
For your stand-up, is what
oh,
I'm saying. It's
oh,
yeah, it's not
okay.
Like a...
Not like a torture chamber in the basement.
No. That's
okay.
Not... I don't torture that way. Hey, Marcon, have you seen anything good lately?
It's
hard, because you were just
I have,
on,
right,
so
I
you
was
used them all
very
up.
Recently. You and I saw a movie.
Yeah, we did.
This past weekend.
Yeah, we did.
We saw The Last Stand.
Yeah, we did.
Which was exactly, I think, what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It was pretty close to what we thought it
yeah.
Was going to be. I don't want to get too much into it, because Patrick, for those of you who haven't seen, who haven't been on the website, Patrick wrote a review of it, and so I would encourage all of you to read that. I think, if I could just, I don't know, just add my 2 cents. It was nice, it was great seeing Arnold. On the big screen.
It makes me very happy.
Doing Arnold
yeah.
Things. And I think if you like Arnold, then nothing we can say will dissuade you from seeing this. Which is fine, because Patrick and I are like that, I think. And it's fine. If you don't like Arnold, then don't see this, because you're probably not going to enjoy it, maybe.
Unless you're
not.
Like a huge Forrest Whitaker fan.
A huge fan of Forrest Whitaker's left eye. Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Which is fine. I just, his stuff,
somebody
the problem with the movie is that too much time is spent with Forrest Whitaker and with the bad guy.
Agree.
Then every time Schwarzenegger's on screen, I'm like, I like this movie. Yeah, this movie's good. It's fun. More time with him. And then every time it's other people, yeah. I'm like, ah, this movie's not as good as it probably could have been.
Just to be clear, it's not really Forrest Whitaker's fault. It's just the words that he's forced to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the ridiculous character that he plays that makes not good decisions.
Right.
Not
and once. The, and not the once. Bad guy, it's like he's just driving a car. And he's not a particular, he's no Hans Gruber, you know, he's like, he's not a particularly interesting bad guy. He just has an accent and drives very fast.
He has very well manicured facial hair,
which
makes him a villain.
I did like a couple of his getaways though.
Yes.
Where all the sound drops out at that one moment and he does
with
things with a car that you don't think he should be able to do.
No, it's great.
But it's a very special Corvette, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's really fast. It's
so you liked the movie?
I think I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
I think, I'm glad I saw it with you, because I know you were also enjoying it, so that always helps.
Yeah.
By
the way, no one else in America saw this movie.
I know.
Did you see it? Like,
Patrick had commented as we were in the theater, and we looked around, and then there was a... Well, first of all, it was all dudes that was in there, and they're all dudes about our age, maybe a little bit older, which makes sense. And the only problem was there was, like, only 10 of them. And we were looking around, and we're like, oh, man.
I was genuinely surprised at how empty it was on opening day.
Right.
And I thought, well, okay, maybe it's just an off time or something, because, I don't know, I thought Schwarzenegger making a movie again would be a bigger deal.
Yeah.
If you consider the success of both Expendables movies, I mean, people are, like, those movies make a bunch of money, and people get really excited about those. So I thought, like, well, apparently old school action or, like, action hero comebacks, like, that's in vogue again.
Right.
Great. The Last Stand should do decent. I didn't expect it to make $100 million,
right?
I didn't expect it to make $6 million in its opening weekend and barely make the top 10. I'm bummed out about that. I really am for two reasons. One, it suggests that Arnold Schwarzenegger is no longer a viable movie star, which is very possibly true.
Sure.
However, that means we're not going to get more Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
Yeah.
And I want that. And two, it means, you know, that what, Kim Ji-woon won't make another American movie.
Right.
Which isn't the end of the world, because I'm sure he'll make movies in Korea and I'll see those movies, you know, and I will like those movies, but I would like him to still make.
Yeah.
More movie.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It was a little, it's a little disappointing just on that.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I think part of it is just that, I was just thinking of other older guys, like Bruce Willis or Stallone.
By the way, Bruce Willis, as evidenced by the trailers before we saw The Last Stand, has three movies coming out. Every movie had Bruce Willis in it.
Right, we saw three Bruce Willis trailers in a row, and I was like, maybe the next one's with Bruce Willis. but then, you know, Bruce Willis has been working, obviously, very steadily, just constantly is working, and so I think people, I think the younger generation is familiar with Bruce Willis.
Sure.
And so, when he makes A Good Day to Die Hard or whatever, then people will go see it. They will. But I think for Stallone, who's more in Schwarzenegger's boat, who just hasn't worked as often, and people kind of don't really know him, I don't want this to happen necessarily, but I think maybe the same thing will happen to him. Like, whatever his, I forgot what the name of the movie
Bullet
was.
Bullet in the Head?
Bullet in the Head.
Yeah.
Whoa, oh boy. Okay, anyway. I think that might suffer the same fate.
I think you're right.
Just...
They really only want to see him
in
the Expendables.
Sure.
So it's only worth going to see an action movie with sort of an icon of the past if there are eight other guys in the cast with him.
It's the critical mass of 80s icons we need. Like, wait, there's just one in here?
Yeah.
No.
Get it.
Or
get it. Bull in the Head does not look good either.
No,
I'm excited. I'll totally see it, you know, opening day. But, like, there's another example where, to me, it's more exciting because it's a new Walter Hill movie, and we haven't had a new Walter Hill movie in I don't know how long. I don't remember the last movie Walter Hill made, and it'll make no money, and somebody will say, well, Walter Hill can't make any more movies, and that'll be a bummer.
That will be sad.
But I want to see Stallone have, like, an axe fight with Jason Momoa of TV's Stargate Atlantis. Yes, I know, everyone, Game of Thrones.
Right.
To me, he will always be, that bad Conan movie. To me, he will always be Ronan Dex. Anything besides The Last Stand?
I want to mention two things.
Yeah.
I saw a movie on Netflix called The Yellow Sea. It's a Korean movie. And I don't know, this is terrible because I'm Korean and I don't remember Korean names. I'm really sorry, everybody. I'm the worst Korean in America. But it's the guy that did, okay, it's the director and the actor from Chaser. I know you've seen Chaser.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the same director, it's the same main guy who plays the villain in this movie.
Okay, they're like Korea's De Niro and Scorsese.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's Korea's, who's like a lovable villain? He's Korea's Donald Sutherland. Sure. right. I don't know, he probably isn't. Anyway, the movie is about this guy, and he's looking for his wife, who has gone back to, like, they live in a different part of Asia. They live in a part of, you know, like China, and then like people from there go to Korea.
Oh, back up. There are different parts of Asia?
I know. I'm not going to.
Ignorance corner!
I know, you should. I was going to bring you to say it because I feel like you had like a tune in your head that goes along with the title.
I was just like, ignorance corner! It wasn't, right. Okay. I didn't actually write a melody.
Oh, okay. I thought you had one in your head.
No.
And I thought, in my head, when I hear Ignorance Corner, I have to hear, like, clown horns.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or, like, a banjo, like, like a banjo sting.
Sure. Because banjos are ignorant. That's the instrument of the ignorant. So, anyway, this part, like, they have to go from China to mainland Korea because of, like, their immigrant status or something like that. Anyway, and so this guy is looking for his wife who fled away to Korea, and he's, like, missing her. He doesn't know what happened. And so this bad guy, the villain, who's the other guy who's in...
The guy from Chaser.
Correct.
Got
it. Who is the villain in this movie, called The Yellow Sea. He's a mobster guy, and he says, okay, well, I'll let you go to Korea to look for your wife, but you have to do this bad guy thing for me.
Ooh.
Oh, right. Which is murdering this person.
That is a bad guy thing.
Yep.
Ooh, unless the person he has to murder is an even bigger bad guy.
Yeah, and then so it turns into this whole mess of, like... He gets involved with these other people, and then, like, who is this guy? And he does get murdered, and what ends up happening? But it was, like, the wrong guy, and then he's connected to all these other people. And so it ends up being this nice, like, sort of mystery, whodunit, suspense kind of thing, and there's lots of little plots, twists and turns. Worth checking out if you like those kinds of movies.
Okay.
The Yellow Sea.
Here's my problem.
Sure.
I like the Korean movies.
Sure.
But... The plot you're describing a little bit sounds like a nightmare to me because you know I don't like the movie where, like, the guy keeps falling further and further into, like, the rabbit hole.
Right,
you know?
And it's not his fault.
Yeah, I mean, in this, yeah, like, Innocent Man Wrongly Accused, North by Northwest, I don't like those movies.
Yeah, you hate it.
They make me so nervous.
That's your horror movie, but, like, for real horror.
They make me so, I don't... Like, where, like, oh, if someone would just listen to his explanation, this could all be wrapped
someone
up.
Someone just took a second.
Yeah, right?
Hear him out.
So, I do want to see this movie, but I don't know. Trying to weigh right now. What do I like more?
I got you.
And I also didn't love Chaser.
Right.
I'm still going to see The Yellow Sea.
I think the bad guy, the villain, the guy who's in Chaser, does a really good job. Because I think the movie doesn't just focus. It actually ends up shifting focus. The first part of the movie... First half, I don't know, focuses on this main protagonist guy. But then it just sort of slowly shifts perspective to the bad guy.
I like that.
So that's kind of cool.
All right. I'm going
to
see it.
Yeah. Yellow Sea. Yeah, check it out, people, if you want to. The other movie I want to talk about is I saw Dread.
Oh! Dread. How is Dread?
With
I
Carl
so
Urban.
Badly want to see Dread, and I haven't
saw
been
it
able
on,
to yet.
On Instant Video somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked it.
Okay.
I'm going to admit that I liked it.
Okay.
Some people
are, like, crazy about it. Like,
yeah,
people really loved it.
Yeah, I liked it.
And then other people thought it was garbage.
I liked it. I remember when I first saw the Stallone Dread movie, and I didn't know any about the cover. Right, I know. Ha ha. I didn't even finish that sentence.
I saw it opening night. I saw a double feature.
Oh, boy.
Opening night. Here comes, in the theater.
Uh-huh.
Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie.
Oh, boy.
It was a dark. It was a dark.
I would have just seen Judge Dredd twice.
It was a dark. I probably should have.
So when this first character I first heard about it in the Stallone movies, like, I didn't know anything about the comic book like that. But even watching the Stallone movie, which definitely has its problems, I still really liked the idea of, like, you know, the future, and, like, he's this kind of basically the super cop, basically.
And I'm like, I'm the
law. Think how much more of a law it would be if Rob Schneider wasn't there.
Rob Schneider.
Right. But I thought that was cool, and I thought the vision was cool. And so when I heard that they were made a remake, I'm like, oh, okay. So hopefully they'll learn the lessons and strip down, like, the comedy, why... why you need to inject.
So Rob Schneider is not in the new one.
Right, because because he's the comedy.
Right.
Air quotes, everybody. Air quotes. Can you hear them?
You should text it to Doug.
Right. I'm going to text it to Doug, and he won't understand. No, Doug, you understand things.
Yeah, Doug, by the way, the moral of that story was not that Doug was in the wrong.
The moral of the story
it was not Doug's fault for not understanding my stupid text.
Right, the moral of the story is that I should not take advantage of my friends.
The moral of the story is no one should see Terminator Salvation. I hope that was the takeaway, everyone.
I know. Sorry, McGee, and McGee's mom. Who also probably saw it. But then Dread 3D, it's very stripped down. It's much more, like, there's not a lot of complicated layers, and maybe somebody would be like, well, I would like to know more about this character or this person's backstory. Right. But they don't give it to you, because it's like, whatever, we're just going to go, like, shoot things. I know there's been some flack, because it's been compared to the Raid Redemption, just because it's the same, like, they're in a
building. We're in this giant comp.
They got to fight to find their way out of there.
Right.
But it's fun. I didn't see it on 3D, obviously. I didn't see it on the big screen. But I can see there's some slow motion situations where I can see on 3D that'd be kind of pretty cool looking.
Okay.
I liked it. It was fun.
Super violent, right?
Yeah, a lot of people get shot up and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And unfortunately, you know, again, I won't get into anything political, but given the times, I should have lost my taste for violence. But sometimes when I hear, like, it's this action movie that's super violent, I'm like, oh, I gotta see that, you know? Right. And that's wrong. Yeah. I should have the opposite reaction, right? Because I'm not a fan of real-life violence.
Right.
But I'll dig on movie violence.
Right. If a person for real was wearing a bucket for a helmet and then had a gun that shot 7 different bullets,
right,
I'd be like, no.
The only way I want somebody with a bucket for a helmet is if that person is playing guitar in a band.
Yeah. Or is Carl Urban in this movie?
Yeah, oh yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I thought that went without saying.
So, it's worth watching. I know people, I know some people probably had missed it or something, but
I missed it, yeah.
It's worth checking out, for sure. It's worth your couple of dollars.
We had a comment, I think, maybe on our Facebook page, that when we got to, like, our year-end shows, either our best of or sort of our overrated, underrated, somebody said, like, hey, why was Dread not mentioned?
Yeah.
And it's because I didn't see it.
We didn't see it, sorry.
Otherwise, it may have been.
Well, yours is making up for it. I liked it.
Dread had maybe, I don't know, stood on a ledge. Yes, I would have seen it, okay? It's what I'm saying.
Dread on a ledge.
Dread on a ledge. I want to start working Dread into more movie titles.
And then Ignorance Corner also.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's going to come up a lot.
Okay, nice.
Speaking of The Raid, I saw a movie that... Okay. I'll make the connection to The Raid in a second. It's a Thai movie called BKO, okay. Bangkok Knockout, in case you're wondering what BKO stands for. The title spells it out. And here's the thing. It's entertaining. It's not as good a movie as The Raid. I just have a feeling that had The Raid not come out and been as kick-ass as it is, sure. I think more people would have been saying, like, ooh, this movie, Bangkok Knockout, this has incredible fight sequences, because it does. And like The Raid, that's basically all it is. Mm-hmm. The Raid is smarter in the way that it sort of pares down everything and the way that it sets up its premise, just like, ooh, good guys trapped in a building and bad guys have to fight their way out, much like Dread.
Ready, go.
The Raids, or not The Raid, BKO kind of does the same thing, but it's very, there's these teams of good guys, and they're all trying out to be on a reality show, or like America's Next Stunt Team, only it's not America. And then they all end up in a warehouse, and they have to fight. The premise makes no goddamn sense.
Okay.
It's just an excuse for these fight scenes. And the fight scenes are great. Where the movie goes crazy is that it's way, like, sillier than The Raid and sort of more overwrought. It's like, I don't know what to compare it to. Any scene that's not a fight scene is terrible and ridiculous. And, you know, bad dialogue and bad acting in any language is bad dialogue and bad acting. And so that's this movie. And then there's weird comedy beats, and it's a crazy movie.
Okay.
That alone sort of makes it worth seeing. But great action scenes and great fight choreography that, you know, again, goes on and on and on, oftentimes in a single take, which is always
great.
Super cool.
Yeah.
That's really, I think, the only thing. Oh, you know what? I last night on Netflix. Oh, that movie was, I believe, still is available on Netflix. And last night, my wife and I watched 2 Days in New York,
okay,
which is the sequel to 2 Days in Paris, sure, written and directed by Julie Delpy. I'm a fan of Julie Delpy based on her work in the Richard Linklater movies. less a fan of her writing and directing output. Oh. 2 days in New York, I found very grating.
Is it like a relationship?
Yeah. Definitely owes a lot to sort of early to mid 90s Woody Allen, his sort of husbands and wives period. Not very good. And 2 days in New York substitutes Adam Goldberg for Chris Rock. Mm-hmm. It's not Chris Rock's fault, but yeah, it was rough. It was rough. I don't recommend it. So, Dread, BKO, The Yellow Sea, The Last Stand. You only have about 3 more days to catch it in theaters.
Right.
All good choices for movies.
Be a part of history.
Maybe skip 2 days in New York. Otherwise, I've just been watching all these crazy, like, exploitation movies, and even the titles of some of those are so offensive that I won't mention what they are, but more than one includes the N-word, I'll say that.
Oh, nice. What do you do in your secret life? When you're not podcasting? I don't know what happens. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so anybody thinks I'm not watching, like, some crazy skinhead movie. There's a movie...
Yeah, come on, guys.
...written by Fred Williamson, starring Fred Williamson, called Boss. When it was originally released, there was a word after Boss.
Oh.
It's a Western where he plays the sheriff, and it's actually really good. It was directed by Jack Arnold, but, I'm not a racist, everyone. Ignorance Corner is a bit.
I'm sorry.
It's a bit.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk...
Right, ignorance also doesn't just have to be racism.
Yeah, thank you, because let's talk about The Fifth Element. I hate the French. I can't stand... Sorry. I'm sorry.
That's fine. It's fine.
I thought we were still in Ignorance Corner.
Oh, no. I was talking about the fact that I don't know how to do my own laundry, which I think
really?
Is pretty... No, I do.
It's okay.
I did now, because okay. I could read English.
Oh, good job.
So I was able to.
Good job.
Right.
Shouldn't English be... the national language. I'm sorry. Ignorance Corner.
American
I'm sorry.
Was
yeah, there we go. There it is. I speak American. This show has taken such a weird turn. Let's
it's
talk
Monday.
About the yeah. Fifth Element.
Let's talk about it.
Written and directed by Luc Besson from 1997, starring Bruce Willis and Mia Jovovich. Ignorance Corner.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a bunch of other people.
A bunch of Luke Perry, Chris Tucker, Ian Holm, Gary Holm. Yeah.
Tiny Lister.
A crazy cast. And what is... Okay. What is your relationship to The Fifth Element?
Okay. I really liked it.
Okay.
Ever since the first time I saw it.
Yes.
Background, context. I like these kinds of movies.
Yes.
I've grown up, I always liked science fiction kind of stuff. Right, I'm the generation that grew up with Star Wars as when we were little kids, etc. So I saw this and I was like, science fiction? Fantastic. I'm all in. There's weird blue people? Great. I'm all in. So I liked it always. I sort of always liked it. And I could see that it wasn't like this, that there were problems with it and it wasn't perfect or whatever. But just in sort of reading a few things before coming here to talk about it, I saw that a lot of people really didn't like it. Like, not just were, like, lukewarm, but they were like, oh, no. Like, people calling it, like, the worst science fiction movie of all time when
yeah,
it came out.
I
found that really surprising.
Me too. That's crazy talk, because going into this, I have thought,
yeah,
maybe it's because I frequent sort of specific communities.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this movie was really held up and beloved. I thought that the fact that I am less crazy about it would sort of make me a pariah. Like,
sure.
That I was going to get a bunch of shit because I don't love The Fifth Element. I like it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't love it. And I thought that was going to be a problem for some of our listeners or some of sort of the fanboy community at large, because I really thought that everybody loved this movie, and I, like you, did a little bit of reading, and it was like, yeah, that people are calling it this movie that ruins science fiction. It's like, oh,
okay.
I think both reactions are maybe a little strong, because I don't love it unconditionally, but I think you would have a really hard time making a case that this is the worst science fiction movie ever made.
Yeah, there's too many fun things to talk about, so
yeah.
We should get into it.
We
should do some sort of brief, because we talk about the plot. It's been out
is
for a
there
while.
A point? It's,
Do it real fast?
Sure.
Okay, Bruce Willis plays Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
And the movie is called Corbin Dallas, but he's still Bruce Willis.
Basically, but he's blonde.
Right, he's blonde this time. But he's from New York. Does that sound familiar? He drives, he's a cab driver. This is set in the future. There's spaceships, there's flying cars, which, by the way, it's 2013 right now, damn it. Where are the flying cars?
I don't know.
I was promised flying cars.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he drives a cab, whatever, all this stuff, but he's like ex-military, because of course all action heroes used to be something more badass than what they are now. And so he's doing that sort of thing, and then he discovers that there is, well, actually that's like the main story, but there's like a backstory which spans millennia, which like there is evil, and the only way to fight evil is you have to gather these four things called the elements, four different elements, and then you have to get a fifth element, which is like the supreme being, and then the supreme being like does away with the evil once every 5,000 years. I think that's the rough timeline. So anyway, they're trying to get that because the evil is coming, and they're trying to gather the stones and gather the fifth element and all that other kind of stuff, and then Corbin Dallas gets caught up in this race against time to make sure that the supreme being, which is the fifth element, is in place to go fight off the evil. That's the bare bones story. Skipped anything?
That the fifth element is crazy orange-haired
Mila Jovovich. Because she's the supreme being.
Playing Lilu, who literally just falls through the window of his cab.
Yes, as serendipity would have it.
Which wraps him up in this crazy story.
True.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair
plot
summary.
Awesome.
You didn't mention the blue people.
I didn't mention
Gary Oldman playing what appears to be a Looney Tunes villain.
Yes.
Or President Zeus.
Yes.
Opera sequences, pyramids, Luke Perry.
Chris Tucker
as a radio. This is another one of those instances. Last week when we talked about Battle Royale, I had said, like, this is supposed to be the future, right? But they don't seem to have video capabilities or video technology. Here's another movie where we're in the distant future, and yet Chris Tucker appears to be just broadcasting a constant radio show.
Yeah.
And listen, in Luc Besson's defense in 1997, he didn't know radio would be dead by around the mid-2000s.
Right.
But it is weird to see the future in which everyone's glued to their radios.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump right to Chris Tucker, but we should probably go back to Chris Tucker because his performance is sort of legendarily bad in that it's at odds with the movie. And again, there's this list of movies. Somebody made a list of performances that ruined the movies they were in. And
oh boy.
Chris Tucker always ends up at the head of that list. And I don't particularly like the performance. I don't really think the character is all that necessary.
Right.
But I think it gets a little more hate than it should.
Yeah.
It's just become one of those things that's easy, where it's like, oh, I know, Chris Tucker in Fifth Element, because that's what all these other people have
said. I think it's also that people just don't like Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
So it becomes a lot easier.
And he's definitely sort of off the
rails.
Like, hey, do your thing, Chris Tucker. That's your thing. 97, when this movie came out, was an interesting year for sort of action movies, because they were really sort of finding their way. Through most of the 90s, they had kind of gone away, or, I mean, they always existed, but there were very few that you could point to and say, like, oh, that's a great one, you know, like,
yeah.
Between 91, which to me, it was maybe the best year for action movies ever.
Yeah.
Because you have sort of A-list action movies, but then you also have guys like Seagal and Van Damme at their peak. So 91 to me is where action movies kind of peak. And then it kind of goes away for a while. And every once in a while, like a Speed pops up. But then in 97, you get John Woo doing Face Off.
Yes.
You get Con Air, which I don't love Con Air, but it's very much at sort of the start of the Simpson, Bruckheimer, Michael Bay. And by the way, I know that Simpson, Bruckheimer was already done by 97. That's just what I use to describe that sort of Tony Scott fast cut Michael Bay aesthetic. I guess it's more just the Jerry Bruckheimer. So The Rock had come out the year before, but now here's, you know, Con Air coming out. And there was another one that came out that same year. I don't remember. And you have The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Which is this crazy movie that doesn't look like anything else. And, oh, because it's from France. And so it's super colorful. It has this weird energy to it. It's very broad. It has offbeat humor and these unusual performances. And it combines these rock aliens and Gary Oldman with a wacky haircut and Mila Jovovich has orange hair, and so I saw it. I was really excited to see it, and I saw it, and I liked it, because it was so different from everything else I've seen. But I've never quite warmed to it in the way that I think I'm supposed to, again, based on the reactions of people I know or respect. And it has become my Cherry 7-Up, where for a long time, Cherry 7-Up seemed like such a good idea to me, and I would drink it, and I wouldn't really like it.
Okay.
And then maybe a year would go by, and I would see a can of Cherry 7-Up in the vending machine, and I would say,
hey,
it seems like I should like this. And so I would buy it again just to remind myself, oh, I'm not that crazy about it. That's the Fifth Element, where once a year, once every 2 years, I think, I should really like the Fifth Element. And the things that pop out to me, and I do. I mean, I like it. I just don't love it.
Right.
You know, the images that pop out to me are of the cityscape with all the flying cars, or Mila Jovovich's orange hair, or just the color palette of the movie. Things that I like are what pop out in my memory, and I think, oh, right, I do like that movie. And then I watch it, and it starts in a pyramid, and I'm like, oh, no, why is Luke Perry in this again? Why are we starting all the way back here?
Right.
And the movie feels like a mess to me. Again, the thing that I like about it is how little it resembles any other movie.
Right.
But I would be lying if I said I was a huge fan of the movie.
Okay. What parts about it, I don't know if it's hard to prioritize, but what parts about it do you feel like work the least? Like you mentioned the Egyptian, the pyramid part.
Yeah. Well, I think the pacing is all over the place.
Agree.
Especially for an action movie.
Yeah.
And problematic. Honestly, I think just the story, for as simple as it in theory is, giant evil is coming literally in the form of just a flaming rock. Yeah. Like, I appreciate the fact that he tries to visualize ultimate evil without going too crazy. Like, here's what it looks like. Yeah. It's just this big thing on fire and it's coming for us.
Right.
So I appreciate that. It seems like the story's so simple, but for some reason, it just becomes too ludicrous.
Sure.
And I guess that's both the movie's blessing and its curse, because in one breath, I'm championing the movie for its willingness to be ludicrous.
Right.
While at the same time saying, some of that leaves me cold.
I like that you, I didn't really have a good idea in my memory in terms of how, like, the landscape that this movie came out in, and I didn't remember it all that well. I think when I was thinking about it, I always compare it to, I don't want to say compare it because I don't actively compare it, but I just think about the two previous movies that Luc Besson made, where it was Nikita, and then it was The Professional.
Yeah.
And then he made this.
Yeah.
So it's so, like, it's just so, so different. I think even when you look back at Besson's career or his filmography or whatever, stuff that he was involved with, The Fifth Element still sticks out as something like way different than whatever he kind of does.
Finish your thought, but I want to come back to exactly what you're saying.
Because he kind of does these like sort of like more action instead of sci-fi kind of stuff. So I just thought of it that way. I think the parts that the parts that I enjoy the most were that without like too much explanation, I felt like I was able to readily understand and sort of like see the depth of the universe. Cause I say this like lived in feel the universe. I feel like I write that all the time, except that I write for the website. So I'm going to stop doing it. I apologize, everybody. I'm sure it's very grating by now, but like it's just in a few seconds, like you see the big cityscape and you're like, okay, I get it. Like that's like the Blade Runner city during the daytime whatever, which is so cool. Like he's got like the cops like getting stuff from McDonald's. He's got like whatever, the air transport kind of thing. Even like Zorg, I was just thinking about this yesterday when I was rewatching it. Like Zorg has he's got his desk and then he's got the little keypad, number pad, because they still have numbers in the future. And then all the little things like pop out of his desk or whatever, like drinks or whatever. And I like that one of the things that pops out is like the weird Snuffleupagus animal with the truck.
And that, once again, rewatching the movie for the podcast, that once again was the moment where I was like,
what the fuck is
exactly
that? I don't even understand what that is.
And it wasn't even then, it was later when he's choking.
Right.
that then he gets hit with, like, the cherry or whatever, the little, that was the moment where the elephant comes out, where I'm just like, what is that? Is there an idea you didn't use
right. the song? And then later on, Zorg is holding.
His name is Zorg.
His name is Zorg. Look at it. And then later on, he's holding that little elephant creature thing in his arms as he's on the phone. No, I get it. Look, I understand completely that it's very, very silly.
And there's some movies where that's the exact moment where I would be like, I am in love with this movie for its willingness to just go all the way. And for whatever reason, with the fifth element, it just never connects with me.
I loved it just because it was so silly.
Yeah.
And then it's like just presented to me. And I was like, look, this is the universe that you're in. Yeah. And I was like, okay. All right, cool. I'm down with it. And I just like that it was just these little, like even in the Egyptian part that we're talking about, the pyramids, and then the other aliens, the big, fat, round ones, they show up, and then it's like, hey, they're the guardians, and they're protecting the universe. I don't know where they came from. I don't know why they want to protect us, but I was just like, cool. That's their thing. Right. And then, so it worked for me just because in those very small moments, I can't speak for everyone, didn't need a super long exposition.
Yeah.
Of, like, why they're there. I was like, all right, cool, I'm on this ride. Sure, let's go.
Right. You know, again, there's all these things about the movie that I appreciate, so it's weird that I think it's kind of a failure of storytelling that keeps me at a distance from the movie, or it's weird tonal shifts that, again, sometimes I love a tonal shift, and sometimes I'm like, you just can't get a grasp on what this movie needs to be. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the fact that sort of post-Blade Runner, so much science fiction is just dystopian, like, black sky. You know, you brought up, like, this is what Blade Runner looks like during the daytime. But it's more than just the fact that almost all of the movie takes place sort of in this bright sunlight. Yeah. Or that it's super colorful, that it, instead of being sort of a drag, instead of it being like the world sucks and everything's the worst, mm-hmm. That it is kind of poppy and colorful and bright and bouncy and has this weird upbeat energy, unfortunately driven too far by the Chris Tucker stuff. But, like, I appreciate the fact that it is a movie that the science fiction landscape is sort of this one thing, and the movie says, nope, I'm going to go this way instead. So I appreciate that. Going back to Luc Besson real quick. For whatever reason, and I don't know that this movie was really his sort of, it wasn't necessarily like his audition for, like, blockbuster status, but this was his big attempt to make this big summer movie. Mm-hmm. And the movie was successful. It made a bunch of money. It's still beloved by a lot of people. I guess, like you, I was unaware that so many people hated it, and I don't know if, like, the sting was too great, or if he just literally doesn't need to direct movies. He has such a sort of a cottage industry writing and producing that he's like, I don't even need to direct, because I think he's directed one movie since, and I can't remember whether or not, and I should look it up with the internet at our disposal. There was an animated film that came out between The Fifth Element and now that I thought was his only other movie as a director, but now that I think about it, maybe that was just, again, a writing and producing thing, because he writes and produces every fourth or fifth movie that comes out.
Sure.
But hasn't really directed since The Fifth Element, and I wonder why that is. However,
sure.
When The Fifth Element comes out in 97, I'm aware of who Luc Besson is, right?
Yeah.
I'm aware that he's made these movies in France. I think I've seen La Femme Nikita at this point, and that movie is beloved and this sort of cult cool. It's like the French version of The Killer, where it's like, have you seen this movie that this guy did, and it's super cool, and we've kind of been copying him ever since. Then he makes The Professional, which I still like, even though Gary Oldman's performance, again, which people love, threatens to derail that movie for me.
Yes, it does.
And my line about that movie is always, it's very European, and then there's Gary Oldman being very American.
Yes, he is.
Which is ironic, because he himself is not American, but his whole performance and character feels, like, very American.
Yeah, exactly.
Then The Fifth Element comes out, and it's like, oh my gosh, what a crazy French movie. Like, this guy, in 97, when I didn't like it, the touches that made me, okay, let me back up.
Back up, rewind.
97, I did like it.
Sure.
I felt about the same way about it that I do now, which is, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that I like, but I don't like everything, and so it's like, it's kind of a mixed bag for me, but ultimately I come down on the side of liking it because every few years I feel like watching it again, so clearly there's something that works for me. But the things about it that gave me pause, I should say, I almost dismissed as a character flaw on my part because I was like, well, this is some next level shit. Like, I just don't understand it. Like, this is just crazy French stuff and I can't process it yet. But in a couple of years, when this transforms the action landscape, then I'm going to be able to put it in perspective, right? This is where my head was at in 97.
Here we go.
However, given Luc Besson's output since the Fifth Element, let me ask you this. Has there ever been an instance, and I can't remember if we were just talking about this the other day, or maybe I was talking about it with somebody else, where a movie comes out from a director that is either so bad or so bizarre that you have to reevaluate that filmmaker's entire body of work?
We didn't talk about this, but I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the example that I'll give, and it's a bad example, because the more I think about the movie Precious, the less I like it. But Precious came out, right, and everybody's, oh my gosh, it's so good, and they're hurling Oscar nominations at it, and
right.
Everybody's in love with Lee Daniels, right? And then a month or two later, I seek out Lee Daniels' previous movie, which is a movie called Shadow Boxer,
okay.
Where Cuba Gooding Jr. plays a hitman who's also sleeping with Helen Mirren, who's also a hitman, but she's dying. It is the craziest, campiest, most ridiculous movie you've ever seen. And I thought, oh, this is Lee Daniels, not Precious. And then I start to realize, oh, a lot of this is in Precious, actually.
Oh, no.
Including a character played by Monique named Precious. I think she's a prostitute. So you start to, and then the Paperboy comes out recently, and it's like, yeah, we're all figuring out who Lee Daniels is. He tricked everybody with Precious, but right. This is Lee Daniels. Okay. So on the one hand, when Fifth Element, this is such a long way to go to make my point.
Fine.
When the Fifth Element comes out in 97, and I'm like, oh, this guy is working on another level, blah, blah, blah. In the years since, Luc Besson has devoted his entire life to writing and producing movies that, like, would have been sort of B-level action programmers in, like, 1987, 1988. We've talked about it before, mm-hmm. And you so yes. astutely coined this idea that they were the spaghetti westerns
yes.
of action movies. And that's so right, that they're this weird approximation of this American product that are just different enough to have their own personality. And that's what he has done. And none of them are great. Some of them are decent, entertaining. Most of them tend to be kind of junky, you know? Like, yeah. they're really not there. Kiss of the Dragon. No. I'm not going to make any excuses for Kiss no. of the Dragon or Taken 2 or
so many problems.
Lockout or any of these.
Columbiana.
Columbiana. Yeah, I mean, most of them. Every once in a while, Taken comes along and everybody's like, oh, Taken, I love Taken. Right. Okay, everybody, okay. Let's relax. Taken's not that great either, but okay. Now I reevaluate the film, Fifth Element, watching it, and I'm like, oh, he was kind of telling us exactly who he was. What I assumed was this weird, like, no, stick with me, I'm the future. No. This is him just, a lot of the problems that I've seen in the movies that he writes and produces in the years since are evident in The Fifth Element, I guess is my point. It's just that he's working in a genre that he doesn't often work in, but you can watch Lockout, which he wrote and produced maybe last year, and watch The Fifth Element and draw a pretty straight line. It's just that in The Fifth Element, he's working on a bigger scale and there's like aliens. Like,
oh, I've got so many.
That's because I just talked for 20 minutes.
No, it's awesome. It's great. That's why people tune in, everybody.
Oh, no, they don't.
Next week, Patrick will talk for 30 minutes.
They tune in because they accidentally meant to click on something else.
Oh, shoot. Sorry. Too bad. You're stuck with
it. And then their mouse breaks.
Do people still use mice?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
The plural is mouses.
Mouses. Going back to one of your comments about reevaluating directors, I was trying to think of one. Because I feel like those guys end up, like, not watching anymore. I'm like, Brian Singer.
Yes, there you go, You're like, The Usual Suspects was an accident.
Brian Singer. Damn it. Right, X-Men was okay.
Yeah.
Now it's all going to Cameron Crowe. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, but, this is a whole separate, we should do a whole podcast on this, honestly.
It's a fun podcast.
Because what you're talking about might be directors who lose it.
Oh.
See, I think Cameron Crowe has lost it, unfortunately.
Okay. Had something, now lost it.
Whereas what I'm talking about is...
This is always what he was.
Yeah.
We just
didn't realize it.
Exactly. We just camouflaged it exactly. Something else. We thought it was window dressing.
Right.
But it actually...
And Brian Singer, I think, is maybe that guy. Cameron Crowe less so, but Brian Singer, I think you might be onto something.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think part of it with... I think with Luc Besson also is that this particular movie, Fifth Element, was apparently just... He was... writing a bunch of... He just has been writing since he was a kid, which I think is cool as a person who likes writing. And then Fifth Element was just a bunch of... I'm not going to say everything, like, verbatim, but just a lot of the ideas was just all these, like, little science fiction stories that he'd been writing on since he was a kid. And so I can see how... You made the point earlier about, like, just... Is there an idea that's not in this movie? And I can see how, like, you know, he just, like, dumped out his journals.
And that is definitely what it feels like.
All over the place.
Which, not to cut you off, but, like, that's part of the problem to me, is that I don't think he's figured out... I like a movie that has a lot of ideas. I like a movie, especially a science fiction movie, that has a lot going on and all these different, like you said, feels lived in or, like, has all these ideas. But I don't think he's figured out, necessarily, a way to pull all those in a way that make... I don't think Gary Oldman...
Right.
Is necessary to this movie, with the exception of giving a tangible villain in the movie that isn't the flaming ball hurtling towards us, that the flaming ball has an emissary or something, you know, like...
What hired somebody.
Like the wolf that shows up at the end of the Neverending Story, where it's like, the big bad in the Neverending Story is the nothing, but we need a face to the nothing, so here's the wolf. Okay, great. By the way, I thought of the Neverending Story again at the end of this movie, when it's like, when they're trying to convince her, like, no, you gotta fight for love! Like, say my name, Bastion! Anyway. But the Gary Oldman feels like this idea from a different movie that he's thrown in, you know, that I don't think he's figured out a way to tie them all together. That's
right.
Sorry.
No, I agree. No, don't go to sleep. no, so I like what he's trying to do with all this other kind of stuff. I think Luc Besson is so, I think he's super interesting. It just as a, that there's a person like this that exists, because there's so many elements of what he does that I think really, I was thinking, like, for instance, one thing that he does in a lot of his movies is he has these strong female characters.
Yes.
And he, I think Dana Stevens, one of JB's favorites, she, critic for Slate. She talked about Luc Besson's, like, propensity for waifs with, sad waifs with bazookas, which is such a fantastic way to put it, right? He likes these, and it's, like, this sort of, it's sort of the thing, and I'm thinking, like, of other people, and I'm gonna say Joss Whedon here, but I don't want everyone to kill me, leave me alone, and my family, because I'm not saying Luc Besson is Joss Whedon, I'm saying that they share, sort of this propensity for, like,
James Cameron as well.
Right, subverting... like, upending the genre, right? Like, your strong action hero is not going to be this muscle-bound guy. It's going to be this tiny little girl. And then you see it here with Mila Jovovich. And she's very girly. She's very, like, a little kid. And I like that. I like that he wants to flip that thing over. Man, there's so much... it's great. I'd like that.
I just wish maybe that he would have better quality control. Like, I like that he exists. I like, in theory, what he stands for, but I wish... he would try harder. I don't know. Like,
sure.
Maybe that's not fair, but, like, when I see From Paris with Love, it just makes me sad, you know, instead of, like, I should be excited about every time I see a movie that says, like, from Luc Besson, and for a little while I was, but now I'm just like, you burned me too many times.
Yeah. I think he seems to, because we've talked about Taken, that I think when he does something, he makes something tighter and just, like, less ideas, even though one of his great strengths probably is just coming up with new things.
Yeah.
I think the movies that he comes out with are better. I feel like
Nikita
really works because it's a straight, I don't know what the word is, straightforward? I don't want to say simple, but it's a straightforward idea. Taken is a straightforward idea. Even Lockout. I enjoyed Lockout.
I did,
but it's
too.
A straightforward idea. And I think that's what makes him better.
Lockout, for me, it was all Guy Pearce. Like, Guy Pearce is so good in that movie that he single-handedly makes me enjoy that movie. Because he's so great, because the rest of the movie has all those Luc Besson problems.
Right,
agree. It's bizarre. Go ahead.
I was just going to talk about, I was going to kind of move on to a different.
Please do.
The just action movies in general.
Okay.
I was just thinking about, and it relates to our conversation about The Last Stand being, you know, these movies, like, straight up action movies, And like, I feel like my movie filmography, like stuff that I remember, stuff that I watch, maybe is smaller than yours. So I'm not going to remember everything, but
fewer movies with the N-word in the title is what you're saying. Okay, yes, got it.
Fewer movies that have the word dread in them. I think there is an appeal for, okay, because we've been overrun a little bit by comic book movies and comic book heroes.
Yeah.
And so even though those movies have action in them, they're not considered, I think most people don't consider them action movies.
They are sort of their own category.
Right. Yeah. Like, The Dark Knight Rises had, all the Batman movies had great action in them, I thought.
Right, yeah.
But no one will classify those as action movies.
Right. Dread is a weird instance where it's almost flipped, where it's like it's an action movie that just happens to
be a cartoon character.
Be based on a comic book, but I don't know.
But it's, like, not too many people, I feel like, know about the comic books. So they're just, like, whatever, sure.
Right, exactly.
And so there's such a limited range of, like, straight-up action movies. That is not... And then, you know, there's all the Bourne movies. There's all the James Bond movies. But I think those have become their own thing a little bit. That those are not straight-up action movies anymore. Those are, like, character studies where the main character is an assassin.
Yeah.
And so that becomes, like, something else. That becomes spy thriller stuff.
Right.
Just, like, straight up, like, action, like, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, whatever. And there's there's not a lot of that going on.
Right.
The only dude, like, that's why I love Jason Statham so much. Because that guy does action movies.
Yeah.
And really doesn't do anything. You don't see Jason Statham in, like, the next, like, that horrible ass like New Year's Eve movie. Like, he's not going to be in one of those.
God, I wish it would be though, because they would take such a turn.
I know, he would just shoot everyone and rescue the.
There's just 20 different plot lines going on New Year's Eve. Like, I want to see the ball drop. I want to get back with my ex-girlfriend. I have to stop a fucking terrorist.
Right. You know? I have to protect this little Asian girl.
Every once in a while, we cut back to Jason Statham just beating ass on the subway. And then Ashton Kutcher just moping into his drink.
That's like, fine. And then Liam Neeson, making it like, no, son, it'll be talking to his kid about how true love will actually work. Sorry, guys.
No.
Right. This is a new segment called Make Your Own Movie.
Yes.
And then Lupe San is one of those guys who, like, this is what he does. He primarily does action movies. And he just did, this is what I wanted to mention. He also did direct The Lady, which came out in the last couple of years, which is completely different than anything else. The Lady is about, Burma's, prime minister.
You already lost me at Burma.
Aung San Suu Kyi, I believe is her name. Michelle Yeoh played her. She was a political prisoner.
You got me back.
She was a political prisoner for a long time.
So
it's like a Nelson Mandela type of story.
God damn, if you just said Luc Besson, Michelle Yeoh, I'd be like, sign me up! And then you tell me political prisoner, Burma.
No!
Prime minister.
Burmese subtitles. Yeah. Right. No, I lost you. Yeah. But he just did that a couple years ago.
I'm the worst.
Right. So he did that, which is completely different.
Interesting. How weird, though, that he has this weird passion project and that he funds with, like, Columbiana.
But Oh, my God, Columbiana. I'm so mad about that movie still.
Me too!
God. Okay, we'll get to that later. but, like, he's the guy. He's the guy. He's the bastion of, like, if you want just an action movie and where it's not a freaking trilogy and it's not, like, freaking, like, action. It's not, like, a comic book movie.
Yeah.
And he's, like, the only guy who's making them.
Which is why I say,
he's
like...
the brand name.
Which is why I say, like, I'm happy for what he stands for. I just wish, again, that what he put out was a little bit better.
Right.
I guess. Because, yeah, like you, it's like, I'm somebody who wants to go see an action movie every couple of weeks, every couple of months.
Right.
And so thank goodness that there's Luc Besson who makes that possible. At the same time, I don't want it to be where every time I go... Or Jason Statham. Every time I go see one of them, I don't want it to be where I come away disappointed. Where it's like, I know I should be happy because at least there's an action movie at all. And so I just don't want it to become the thing with horror movies where it's like, you should be happy you have a horror movie at all. So just suck it up and like Texas Chainsaw 3D because at least it's a horror movie, asshole. It's like, no.
No.
Let's at least try, you know.
And there's such a long history of it.
Right.
Like working.
Right.
Again, not necessarily being great, but just it can work.
And that's back to The Last Stand. Like, I enjoyed The Last Stand. I know it's not great, but it delivered on sort of what I wanted it to be. If more of Luc Besson's movies could be, who knows? If Luc Besson's name was attached to The Last Stand and not Kim Ji Woon, I wonder if I would have been like, had I liked it. I wonder if I would have liked it less. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe I'm a hypocrite. I don't know.
It's okay.
I want to get back to the actual Fifth Element real quick, though, because I want to talk about two things. One, Bruce Willis is fine in the movie, and as you said, he just plays Bruce Willis.
Yes.
But if you go back, I bet you could pull out, in almost every Luc Besson movie, a character who looks exactly like Corbin Dallas. Like, I'm already picturing it in District B-13, and I can already picture it in Kiss of the Dragon. It's that sort of dyed blonde, stubble, tank top look. There's a character who looks like Corbin Dallas in almost every Luc Besson movie.
Huh.
Anyway, something to think about. Two, Mila Jovovich. I'm not the world's biggest fan of Mila Jovovich. Like, she's fine.
Sure.
She, unfortunately, has ruined herself, as far as I'm concerned, singing. With these goddamn... No, the singing I don't mind, actually. She has a song. I don't remember what it's called. Erica introduced me to it. It's better than any movie she's ever been in. Oh, however...
Nice.
No, Resident Evil, like, has ruined, and that other one, the Kurt Wimmer one, with the Blood War. Ultraviolet.
has kind of ruined. I had forgotten it, but now, unfortunately,
never forget. As soon as you forget Ultraviolet, it can happen again.
Oh,
So, but I watched The Fifth Element, and man, I gotta give her credit because
she was really good.
She is, and she has an impossible role to play. And I can imagine how many actresses. I don't imagine that many were approached because I'll bet.
Right.
She was one of the first ones Luc Besson went to because he's the guy who's like, that's who I want, you know? Like, yeah. I know the kind of actress who can make my stuff work. And it's not Zoe Saldana.
No.
Columbia. Columbiana.
No.
Lesson learned. Anyway. Yeah. I can imagine, however, if somebody else were doing this and pitching it out to a lot of sort of Hollywood leading ladies, how many of them would just run away with the part that she has to play.
Right.
Just the ridiculousness of that made-up language. Like, people would have bailed. And she sells it, man. She... Yeah. I'm not the world's biggest Mila Jovovich fan, but she really makes it work.
Yeah. I heard she got a lot... I heard there was a lot of flack around... Well, this movie just in general. But, like, she got a lot of flack. Like, people didn't like her performance, and they didn't like Chris Tucker's. Which, I was like, Chris Tucker, I kind of can understand more, but, like, why don't you like hers?
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it. Like, she has to play, okay, she's got to be, first of all, super, like, physical. She's got to run around, she's got to jump around, she's got to kick, she's got to look like she can kick.
Yeah.
And look like, and despite the fact that she's 85 pounds soaking wet. she also has to be very vulnerable, she also has to be sort of attractive, but she also has to be smart. She has to act like she's 5 years old.
She has to go from, like, 5-year-old to just weeping at the fate of humanity.
But she's also funny in it.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's, she has to make a lot of stuff work, I guess. You know, and again, part of the problem, too, I was thinking, okay, so I was jumping 5 steps ahead because I want to talk about Chris Tucker real quick.
Okay.
So we get to Chris Tucker and the whole sequence on the sort of vacation that they have to take, and then they go to the opera house, and that's where the movie kind of starts clicking. The problem is that it keeps cutting away because, as you said, the movie wants to service all these different things. So we have to keep cutting back to Gary Oldman for no reason. We have to keep cutting back to President Zeus, and we have to keep cutting back to Brian James as the guy who works for President Zeus, and we have to keep cutting back to Tricky? Goldie?
It's Tricky.
Tricky? Okay, I couldn't remember.
Right. That's the... Man, if there's anything that screams 1997 about this movie...
Tricky, Goldie, Mopey. It was the Holy Trinity.
Oh, my God.
And Mopey is the only one who sort of continued on and making music.
Right.
And...
Tricky got blown up by Phone Booth.
But Goldie has acted before, too. And I can't think of in what, but I'm positive I've seen him in movies. Look it up, everyone. I'm telling you. So we have to keep cutting back and servicing sort of these secondary and tertiary characters, and it's like, no, if you could just stick with Corbin Dallas and Lelou, you got a movie, you know? So Chris Tucker comes along, and people say that he's what's wrong with the movie. However, I think the reason people think that is twofold. One, that he comes along at a moment where the movie starts breaking off and having to service all these other characters, including him, when we want to be sticking with Corbin and Lelou.
Yeah.
So he's a symptom of the problem, but he's not the problem.
Sure.
And two, his energy is crazy and loud and ridiculous.
Right.
But he is not the only thing that's crazy and loud and ridiculous about this movie.
Correct.
He's a symptom of the problem. He's not the larger problem. I just think he's the symptom that's the most obvious. He's the symptom that calls attention to itself.
Agree.
You know what I mean?
Agree.
I'm trying to think of like, you know, I'm diabetic. If my feet start to fall off, I blame my feet.
Okay.
Because they're the symptom that's the most obvious.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was a bad analogy, but sure, it was the best I could do.
Also, just now everyone has a picture of like, oh, Patrick doesn't have feet.
Yeah, blame my feet, everyone.
I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah.
I'm going to get out the crutches right now. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna make it up the stairs.
My feet are the real enemy. My feet are the flaming ball hurtling towards Earth.
A pure evil. It talks like this on the phone!
Right? Like,
okay.
The phone, sure, look. The flaming ball is calling.
And it's sending out radio waves.
So is Corbin's mom.
Maybe it's making
like,
a phone call.
And again, I thought of Battle Royale, which we just talked about last week, where like, we get to the end of the movie and then we have to have this laugh where like this annoying shrew is calling.
The phone call.
It's just like Battle Royale or it's...
That's what Americans do, guys. What was I going to talk about? I think if Chris Tucker, if he just... what he's doing, I understand what he's doing. Kind of... If he just dialed it back like 10%.
Yeah.
If he just 10%.
Again, I don't think Chris Tucker can be blamed. I agree that like his performance is grating and annoying, but... There was a guy on set who said, perfect.
Ramp it up.
Yeah, exactly. And then cut.
Keep squeaking.
Love it, Chris Tucker. That's the guy that I think we need to hold accountable a little bit more than Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think, but I like the other things that went along with him. I feel like Luc Besson he's more of a poppy filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
Like a pop culture kind of guy.
Yeah.
I know people want to lump him in with this other group of French directors who came out around the same time who made these sort of very stylish-looking movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I like his attention to detail with that stuff. I don't want to go so far as to think that Luc Besson was trying to make some sort of larger commentary at large about like reality television shows. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's what his goal was, although it might end up being that way. But I like the little details that he had that went along with that. Like the little... when Corbin first meets Ruby Rod... And then there's like the row of Japanese schoolgirls with their little like signature notebooks handed out, and he doesn't even look at them. He just takes a paint brush out of a paint bucket and he just smears paint on their signature books,
and then tosses the paintbrush away,
which I think is phenomenal. I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
Later on, when he gets really screechy and like that's annoying, it kind of is.
Well, and part of the problem too, and again, this is a script issue, is that Ruby Rod all of a sudden is brought along on the, like, if he's just a character that Corbin Dallas has to put up with while they're on the ship,
right?
Okay, fine, and then the movie can leave him, but like, he plays a part in the end game,
yeah.
Like, I think that's an issue, that's a problem, I think.
Right.
Like, Ruby Rod becomes too important to the movie.
Yeah.
He should be this thing to be dealt with instead of becoming like, no, you have to come along. Whatever. It's fine.
It was his greatest show ever, Patrick.
But you're talking about a radio show.
It's radio.
It's so funny. I just realized that actually Luc Besson has become like a weird, like he has like a farm. He's not a farm. I can't make analogies, everyone, as you heard by the
diabetic feet,
diabetic corner. But when you think of all the directors who have now, like, started working or become, like, Pierre Morel and Olivier Megaton and Louis Leterrier, like, all these guys have started working. They've come out from under Luc Besson. I can't think of they're the farm teams? Like, what is the, sports?
Franchises.
Save me out. Fine. Sure. I said save me out.
Yeah.
Holy shit, everyone.
We're going to be okay. It's going to be great.
I've never done a podcast, I don't think, with low blood sugar before. Not to go back to diabetes. And I've attempted to do it here, and that has proven to be a mistake.
So, but it makes for great listening.
I guess, except everyone's like, is something wrong with him? Is he having a stroke? Right. No, everyone.
We're going to go get a Coke afterwards.
Just a comma. I just said comma. I wanted to say coma.
Oh, you're not.
This really is so weird. This is our worst podcast, and I feel bad.
No, it's our best podcast. We're talking about The Fifth Element. Yes, it should be our best and our worst.
I don't like Gary Oldman in this movie. I don't like his character. I don't like his performance.
But do you like the elephant stuffed animal?
I guess, but like it. I don't. It's like I don't like when something has to, like, underline itself six times, right?
Sure.
So Gary Oldman could just be the bad guy, right?
Yeah.
And he could even be the colorful bad guy, but it's like, nope, that's not enough. So we got to give him the weird southern accent and the weird pseudo lisp, and then we have to give him that ridiculous haircut, and then we have to put the wardrobe on top of it. It's just like, it doesn't know when to stop being sort of quirky and eccentric.
Luc Besson didn't know when he would ever make another science fiction movie again, so he had to put it all in here.
But it's all, like, bad, kind of. I don't know. That's not for me to say. And there's people who love the movie, and they love these touches. And again, I'm positive that on this podcast, I have talked about a movie where I've said, like, yeah, it's these touches that make me love it. So something clicks with you or it doesn't, because if I really loved The Fifth Element, it would be all these reasons. Yeah. It would be like, oh my gosh, and then what they do with Gary, I would be defending all these things. And for some reason, because the movie has never quite clicked with me, these touches tend sometimes grate at me instead of endear me to the movie.
Yeah. I think this fits into, we were talking about a little bit before about Luc Besson making, like, sort of medium action movies instead of, like, gigantor action movies.
Right.
And I think in the same way, Fifth Element tends to be not like this huge science fiction movie, but it's like a medium. It's not a small one. I don't know if there are small sites. I don't know.
There are. Moon. No, you're right. Remember Moon?
Oh, that's right. Oh, Moon.
Moon's great.
Okay. With Gary Oldman's younger doppelganger, Sam Rockwell. I mean, which is great. Like, I would love to have Sam Rockwell be my younger doppelganger, or Gary Oldman be my older one. Let's see. But I think, like, that's why, I think that's part of the reason why I like this movie so much, that it's contained a little bit,
yeah.
And I can enjoy it. And it's sort of like, we did a list a while back, way back, of, like, movies that we shouldn't like, but we do.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of my movies was Chronicles of Riddick, which is also another...
That is such a perfect choice. I remember reading that being like, yes!
Right.
Yes! That's the right answer.
Right, that's all of the... And I think all of those, The Fifth Element, Chronicles of Riddick, my irrational love...
By the way, people who love Fifth Element, their heads are exploding right now because you're comparing it to Chronicles of Riddick.
I don't care, people! Like, you just hear me out. For me, in my head, not anyone else's, just mine... That Fifth Element and Chronicles of Riddick and my irrational love for Jason Statham movies, like, are all...
There's nothing irrational about it.
Okay. There's nothing forbidden about this love. they're of a piece, because I'm like, these are, like, I kind of, like, I really enjoy those.
Yeah.
And I really like it, and I don't have to, like, work super hard to enjoy Fifth Element.
Yeah.
I don't have to work super hard to enjoy, like, Chronicles of Riddick or these Jason Statham movies. And I really like it. I like what they're doing. I like the main characters. And it all just sort of works. And like, it's in that sort of, like, middle range. It's not something gigantic and franchise and I have to, like, commit to this franchise.
Yeah.
Or it's not this something, like, sort of totally low budget and tiny.
Yeah.
That was all. I'm thinking about this, and I'm like,
yeah, it seems like for sort of a middle of the road or medium sized science fiction movie, like, all you really have to have for me to dig it is, like, good character, good or good protagonist,
sure,
decent premise, good action, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't describe Fifth Element.
No.
And it doesn't describe, like, Lockout. Like, I go back to Lockout because I'm like, good protagonist,
yeah,
decent premise,
sure,
good action.
Okay.
I don't love that movie. It's fine. I like it enough.
Right.
But, like, why don't those things add up to a movie I like more? What are the things that are taking away? And same with Fifth Element. Because my problem with Fifth Element is, like, you lose me at, like, good protagonist. Okay, probably not Bruce Willis. But, yeah, Leeloo. Okay, sure. I'll take Leeloo.
Right.
Decent premise? I don't know. What is the premise of the Fifth Element? And that's where it starts to break down for me. Is like,
you have to protect life.
Right. And then at the end, it tries to make a commentary about, like, what we've done with what mankind has done with, like, the privilege of life, but it literally is tacked on in the last 10 minutes
right,
of the movie.
Right, it's like, whoa, this got really big.
Right? You're trying to do this now?
Right, like, he really loves you. Can't you tell? Because he was looking for the perfect woman.
And when did that happen? And why? Listen, in the last, right as we're wrapping up, I'm all of a sudden like, oh, what is with Fifth Element? But, like, isn't the point of that climactic scene where he has to say he loves her?
Yeah.
Isn't the point that, like, love gives us a reason to save humanity. Like, she has to decide to save humanity because she experiences love, right?
Sure.
I'm fine with all that.
Okay.
So why do we need this extra beat where Corbin Dallas has commitment issues and has a hard time saying he loves her because he's been hurt before? Like, no. Little problem, big problem, right? Let's focus on big problem, not your dumb bullshit. I don't want to say I love you.
Right.
Like, no. That's bullshit.
Right. Because my mom puts all this pressure on me.
Pick the big problem. Tackle the big problem, Luc Besson.
And
not the little problem.
And no, it's even sort of waved at because there's a little cutaway where it's Ian Holm and like the little priest guy and Chris Tucker, they're all staring at him.
Right?
And Ian's like, just tell her.
It's like all of a sudden it becomes about his stupid little like, no. It's not about your stupid.
Right.
It's not about your stupid commitment issue.
Nine,
you are, eight. Right. You have to convince her that mankind is worth saving. That's what we need to be focused on, everyone.
Right.
Last thing I'm going to say, and then I promise we're going to wrap up.
No, that's cool.
I always remember it, and it happened as soon as I watched it again. As soon as I start the movie, and we start in wherever we start, Egypt.
Yes.
With Luke Perry. And I sigh and sink a little in my chair, because I go, oh, that's right. It's this, right? And this, I'm fully copying the fact that this is a personal bias, because the exact same thing happens to me every time I watch the movie, not the show, Stargate. I like the movie Stargate, right?
Yeah.
It's dumb, it's goofy, it's silly, it has a great score. I like Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
It's fun. I dig it, right? However, there's always a part of me that doesn't consider it the sci-fi classic that other people might consider it to be, because we travel through the Stargate, and we basically go to ancient Egypt, and I go, oh, of all the things we could have done, this is what we did, and I sigh.
It's just Egypt, you know.
And I think, I guess that's what it is. Or, I don't like the combination of Egypt with science fiction.
Right, because is it like some weird conspiracy theory that we don't want to buy into?
Anytime you bring Egypt into your sci-fi, I'm like, I don't know,
smells
guys.
Like history class.
Yeah.
Sure don't like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Now I'm thinking of every movie that has Egypt in it.
I really think it's just the science fiction movies.
Science fiction ones. Yeah.
But maybe not.
Okay.
I'm sure there's action movies where all of a sudden it's like they're in Egypt.
Prometheus, there was an Egyptian.
Okay.
Because they saw the thing.
Science fiction.
Oh!
We're on to something here.
Yeah. Next podcast. Guys.
It's me, everyone. Okay. I'm broken inside. Thanks for listening. I need to go get some sugar in my body.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Can I drink a Coke or something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for bearing with me. As I said, I talked like I was drunk. I'm positive. You'll listen back to this. It's like, was Patrick drunk?
No, he was
no.
Drunk. He's never drunk.
He just
needs some Coke.
Needs Coke.
Aziz Lights!